This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 20 for August 28th, 2005. Our cast of characters, it looks like, and a mighty fine cast of characters it is. On Skype again, Steve Gibson. This is our, by the way, the last Skype TWiT.
Because next week we're using Google Talk, right?
Yeah. Steve and I used Google Talk for Security Now, and it sounded much better than
you can't nice. Conference with that now, can you?
I
mean,
conference.
Multiple, yeah.
You can't conference. So Steve is on Skype as well as Robert Herron.
Hello.
Who couldn't get to work today. Thank goodness. So he's able to TWiT with us.
He's telecommuting, right? He's telecommuting to TWiT.
I sent the emails off. I'm on VPN. I've been there all day.
It looks like you're there. Looks like you're there.
People were asking me to go out to lunch, and I'm like, I'm not in the building.
Oh, you shouldn't say that. You just say, oh, gosh,
no, I didn't.
I have so much work to do. I better stay in my cubicle right now. Patrick Norton, who is not at work today. Did I say that? Yes. David Prager is in studio with us producing... are you?
What are you doing? In official capacity with, and kind of half producing.
David and Kevin are here today, along with Keith, who they're doing a little system.
Yes, we are. We wanted to, there's been so many people out there that want to know how podcasting works. And I'd have to say, when it comes to the most complex setup you could possibly have for podcasting, it has
setup.
To be Mr. Leo Laporte with TWiT.
There's no stupider setup, but it's all going to change.
None of the listeners, though, realize what you go through before you start recording the show every week, Leo.
Sometime I'm going to accidentally put out the pre-show instead of the show.
You'd have to bleep a lot. Though.
Yeah, they'll hear me going. Rah, rah, rah. It's all because of Skype. It's all because everybody's coming in different ways, and it's a complicated thing. It's going to be so much easier next week. We are going to be live from the Apple Store downtown San Francisco, 1 Stockton. We'll start setting up at 3, and we'll do the show at 4, and then everybody will have a microphone. Everybody will have headphones. You'll be able to see each other. It's going to be a much better.
Yeah,
I think a much better TWiT. Although Dvorak, who's not with us today, he's afraid it's going to... He says it's going to look like a CES panel and be just about as exciting. I don't think that's the case.
Well, we'll find out.
Do you think
there'll be plenty of interaction still.
I don't think we're going to start saying the future of the internet...
Because it's everyone's personality.
Yeah. Is it going to be a more of a round table, or everyone sitting at a table facing out?
No, it'll be more of a round table. No concessions to the audience. Half of us will have our backs to the audience.
Excellent.
And we'll all be fighting for that. I want my back to the audience. Stories today. Hot news. Anybody? Robert, you had some interesting LCD stuff you wanted to talk about. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Well, NEC just announced at SIGGRAPH earlier this month a new display that they're coming up with that uses LED backlighting instead of compact fluorescence, which are typically used in an LCD display. And the advantages of basically taking a red, a blue, and a green LED to generate that white light is a few great benefits. One, it stabilizes the display quicker. So when you turn it on, they claim within a minute you'll be able to have that in its working condition rather than, say, the 20 to 30 minutes for a regular display.
Wait a minute. It takes 20 or 30 minutes for an irregular display to...
For the normal color balance to finally settle in and stabilize.
You shouldn't be watching your LCD TV for 30 minutes?
No, most people aren't going to wait. I mean, for televisions, you know, it's not as critical. But if you were going to, say, pay somebody to professionally calibrate that display for you in your home, you would definitely want to let it warm up for a half an hour.
Is that true of computer displays, too?
Well, CRTs is really where you really have to wait a while for them to warm up.
And remember,
they're worse than LCDs.
Sure. The phosphors take time to warm up, or to at least, quote-unquote, stabilize.
You're saying 30 minutes, not 30 seconds, 30 minutes.
No, and it could take literally up to 2 hours, depending on the environmental conditions in the room as well, depending on how
hot
or cold the room
is. It's
a lot
colder, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So if I'm a graphic professional and trying to get really accurate color results, I shouldn't be letting my monitor turn off at all. I should just leave it on all the time.
No, or at least have it maybe on a timer of some kind.
Turn it on at 4 in the morning.
Although then you have the reverse problem, which is that the fluorescent tubes are the things in the LCD panels that do ultimately have a short lifetime.
Totally. That's one of the first things to go.
So these LEDs will warm up faster. They won't burn out as fast. How about the color accuracy? Is it pretty good?
Well, with traditional backlighting for an LCD, you're talking roughly, if you compare it to how the NTSC color standard for television production, you can get about 70%, maybe 75% of the color gamut that is used in NTSC. Now, with LEDs, they're claiming that they can, and everyone's pretty much in agreement on this, that they can surpass 100% of the color and actually produce a greater color range than even that is used in TV right now, which is terrific for if you're an editor for that kind of thing. Or even more important, this particular display that NEC is bringing out is also carries a pretty steep resolution of 3200 by 1200, which I believe they're aiming this more toward medical imaging, where a doctor would really... It's more important for grayscale, especially if you're looking at something like X-ray picture. But if you are getting into any kind of color representation for medical technology, you definitely want accurate color to make either a proper diagnosis or just to make sure what you're seeing is what you're supposed to be seeing.
3200 by 1200, you'd be able to do 1080p really easy.
Definitely. Which is only nice. 1920 by 1080.
Wow. My God, how much is that going to cost? And I wonder if they care at all about power consumption. Is it going to be a lot less because it's LED?
Hey, it's a $6,500 display, so it doesn't really matter about how much power it consumes. Actually, it should be more efficient in terms of, compact fluorescents have come a long way. It's a very mature technology, and they are very efficient as far as light goes. And odds are, depending on how many LEDs are used in the backlighting system, it could actually consume more energy. But it's more about, A, you're able to recreate, you know how it is for different white points. You know, the color of white has to be a standard as well, depending on if you work, say, in photography or television or PC displays. They all have different white point temperatures. And with this display, you actually have a variable temperature where you can pretty much set it anywhere you want or prefer it to be on the fly even.
Are they white LEDs in the background, or is it white? Is it red, green, and blue?
Odds are they're using an RGB system where they use a red, a blue, and a green. And that way
not filters,
they can either cycle through all three of them at once or individually tweak one or the other in real time to match whatever standard you're trying to go for. And other technologies too would be like 10-bit color internal color processing, which is important to eliminate rounding errors when you're trying to, say, resolve an image that's even greater resolution than what the display is physically capable of. Sometimes you run into like dithering errors when it's trying to map that a large image onto a relatively small resolution. But in this case, it's...
You'll think we see the LED TVs in the future, near future?
They're supposed to be out already, and I think it seems to be the biggest problem was getting LEDs of the similar brightness and being able to dial in an array of them
to control
to the similar brightness, so you have even luminance.
Right.
Manufacturing tolerance problem.
Right. That's a manufacturing issue.
And I know they've worked on chips recently to where they can then simply put each LED in front of a little photo measuring device and just dial in each one to a specific setting and lock
it
there.
Yeah. How about LED projectors?
But that's time consuming.
How about LED projectors? Because weren't they talking about LED PowerPoint projectors in the near future?
Already. A couple weeks ago, I was at a Texas Instrument toy tour, they called it, and Mitsubishi was there with their pocket projector, which is a very interesting new device. It's literally the size of a jewel case, a CD jewel case.
We're giving away at the next broadcast.
Yeah, pocket projectors.
Pocket projectors. I ordered them. By the way, I'm a little worried because I ordered them. I don't know if they'll get there in time, but we'll have them at least for the September 18th, if not by September 4th. But it's one of those things where it takes, they have to print it.
Those are going to be collector's items.
It just has the little twit guy and it says twit. It doesn't say a date or anything like that. Well, I would put a date, but then I thought,
if we have extras, I want to get them out.
We can handwrite dates on them. We'll sign them. There's lots of room for autographs. Vive, V-I-I-V. It's the new Intel processor. We kind of knew they were going to do that because they trademarked V-I-I-V a while ago, but everybody was speculating. What was V-I-I-V? Is it the Roman numeral 6-4 for 64-bit computing? Well, it's the new Intel, and they say it rhymes with Strive. They announced it at the Intel Developers Forum. Anybody, Patrick, did you read up on this? Any thoughts about it?
Oh, boy. The general reaction was this is the least or the best leaked secret in computing. Yeah, that was the first reaction I heard from a lot of people. And nobody expected them to not release it until the end of 2006. So it's going to be a long time before it shows up, these next generation
processors. They're saying now first quarter 2006. That's what Intel said.
then they changed their message since everybody did their briefings 3 days ago.
Oh.
They were saying end of 2006, second half of 2006.
Oh.
So,
all right. We'll have to check that. So
either that or they gave bad information to the guys that do
probably not. I'm
processor
to,
reviews.
Let me see where I read that. I thought it was I read it in one of the articles about that. I'm quoting that. So it won't be for another year.
Basically, you're looking as far out as the end of 2006, but second half of 2006.
They're dual core.
65 nanometer. They're working on dual core. They're pretty heavy. They're in full Borg mode on the. It's all about processing power per watt. As a that was an interesting sound.
As a new metric. Yeah.
As the new metric for it, which is kind of pretty much in lockstep with the presentation Steve Jobs did at the Worldwide Developers Conference when they announced that they were going, leaving IBM and moving into Intel's processors.
Here's maybe the source of the confusion. Vive will be launching in the first quarter of 2006. Maybe the chips won't be. It's just the brand is launching. Because this CNET says, quoting Don McDonald of Intel Digital Home Group, Vive launches in the first quarter of 2006. One feature of Vive, this sounds kind of interesting, is automatic transcoding, ensuring that audio or video encoded in one format will be automatically transcoded without user intervention. So you'll get a DivX and it'll automatically transcode it to AVI. I don't know.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, because it's confusing for consumers. They download video and they can't watch it until they have the proper codec.
Yeah, but transcoding, I don't know.
Doesn't sound like a good idea.
You got to remember, Intel had so much success with the Centrino, which was not the processor.
It wasn't a chip.
Yeah, it was a tie-in. Basically, you got to tie into a ginormous, huge advertising campaign if you used an Intel processor and an Intel chipset and an Intel, and this is the important one, the Intel 8211. That's what, basically, it's the trifecta for Intel. They make a ton of money, and then the notebook vendors got to tie into
the
advertising campaign.
Yeah,
the Vive technology. This is basically Intel finally deciding to embrace on a high profile level the idea of a consumer entertainment PC.
That's the whole point of Vive. Yeah, it's the dual core processor. You get a chipset, a network, cruise a network controller as opposed to the Wi-Fi.
This is more stuff like Vive is more like, hey, there's going to be a remote control. It's going to have cutting edge technology.
It requires Windows Media Center. So,
yeah.
I mean, obviously, instance shutdown and startup. That's cool. I was confusing that then with an actual product.
Right.
So the marketing term rolls out sooner than the actual than these new processors.
The marketing term Centrino worked on me, and I knew exactly what it was. But I still, if I see a notebook that says Centrino, at least a light goes on in my head because at least I know that it's got a Pentium M and it's got wireless. And still to this day, you see that logo and you're like, oh, it's got to be better than a lot of the other stuff that you see anyway. You know,
it means you've been well trained.
Well, I know we all spend a lot of time trying to explain to people, oh no, it's just marketing. But you know what? It does make it easier for somebody to buy, and it's hard when you go into the store to say, well, I need, this laundry list of things. You look for one brand, you say, oh, Centrino, oh, Vive, that's good.
Yeah, the problem is in a lot of cases, there's a lot of successful marketing campaigns that are pointing at awful products that you shouldn't spend your own money on.
Well, I agree.
Have they started talking yet about the naming convention they're going to use for these chips? I mean, I want a standard. There's got to be a standard. It's driving me crazy.
Yeah. Are we going to be like...
Did they say anything like the 8057A or no? It's just right now.
I don't remember anything very clear, and that actually would be an interesting story to follow up on.
Well, they announced, I'll give you an example. There's a new video display processor they're calling the O plus MN301. That fits right into the line.
People who are buying those are people who are
integrators. So there's Yona, which is a laptop single core processor. That comes out in the first half.
That actually is really interesting. That's the new notebook processor.
Is that a code name or is that the actual?
That's the code name.
Code name, okay.
That's the code name.
It's out of Israel, so they're using it. Yona is the Book of Jonah.
Yeah, well.
So what? Tell us about that. What's interesting about that, Patrick?
Not too much. I mean, part of what was interesting about that is that for the next generation of the desktop chipsets, a lot of it's coming out of the Pentium M, which is coming out of the Israeli design teams that have been doing the low power, high efficiency stuff. Less so, you know, then there's going to be that plus a dash of the 64-bit stuff that's going on here in the States. And what's interesting is they keep saying that NetBurst architecture is definitely in there, but nobody seems to know where at what level.
So, have you noticed too that as they talk about power per watt or performance per watt, that it almost quietly slips in that these chips not only do they offer shorter pipelines, but as far as processing through the processor itself, but it won't allow it to scale up as high as far as gigahertz go.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they keep it cool, right?
Yeah.
And so effectively these could turn out to be slower parts.
Well, that's
for high-end
not...
situations, say like gaming.
But that's why. Why do you think they'd go dual core? What's the point of dual core? Well, that's how Apple handled it. When you get lower megahertz, you put two more.
Yeah, but you're also talking about
for specialized applications. It's great.
Yeah, you don't get any benefit in word processing. I agree. So then there's
gaming.
The successor to Yona is you could in gaming, Robert, if somebody would write threaded games, but nobody's doing that.
I'd take Carmack's take on that back at QuakeCon, where he said basically that for gaming in particular, it's almost it's better to have a good out of order processor than to try to cram everything in being multi-threaded dual core.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
works better for a gaming situation.
In a way, you are multi-threaded already because you have a graphics unit which is taking some of the load off, and you have a CPU which is doing the calculations. You really are dual threaded for all.
Without a doubt, graphics
that's a different
the best case scenario for massive parallel processing.
Yeah, that's parallel processing. But
for everything else. I can't think of anything that would benefit from it in terms of the gaming world.
And that's the word that's coming out from a lot of people who design regular applications. You know, I mean, it's you look at the cell processor, and it's a great concept, but isn't this the same thing that, you know, everybody from the NSA to who knows who all else, you know, massively multiple parallel processing? Well, it's not exactly massively multiple parallel processing on the cell processor, but, you know, single thread applications pretty much rule the desktop. You know, how fast does Word need to run?
Next generation after Yona is Susaman. I don't know what Susaman means. Adds memory protection and dual processor because Yona's single core. Mm-hmm. And that's really a server chip. And then after that, you've got the Xeons, which are DP and MP, which are obviously dual or four or more processors, respectively. The Dempsey's a dual-core Xeon. I'm just running through the roadmap here. Just stop me if anybody wants to talk about any of these. There's a platform called Bensley. You can see why you need a naming convention. This is ridiculous.
But this is the way they've done. You remember something. You're talking about the stuff. The stuff we're looking at are all the code names, and the only people who look at that are people like us who are tweakers.
Right.
Who are like, like we're all sitting here planning when we're going to buy our next notebook and waiting to find out like whether or not Yona is going to be a gaming notebook part or whether it's going to be a standard notebook part and whether or not the multi-threading in Windows XP will give us any decent kind of performance out of it so we can finally run a Skype phone call at the same time we have 42 windows open in Mozilla.
Tell me if this scares you. This is a quote from Paul Gelsinger, general manager of the Digital Enterprise Group. They're touting something called active management technology. Quote, we want to embed just a little bit of the IT manager directly into each piece of silicon we ship.
That actually sounds a lot more awful than it actually is. Because I got to talk to... No, that actually... What they're trying to do is bring more manageability into the chipset.
Right.
And there's some really good reasons for that in terms of how you handle and how you start foiling everything from spyware to doing secure transactions, and there's they got a long way to go between hither and yon, but a lot of that's more like, you know, making life easier for people who are administering 50,000 desktops.
Meanwhile, Sony and IBM releasing more information about the cell processor, obviously timed to coincide with these Intel announcements.
Mm-hmm.
I read them, but it didn't seem like anything particularly new. I mean, it's a multimedia processor. We knew that already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to look at what Intel did with the new chip design, where it's they've upped the bandwidth between the L1 and the L2 cache. The multi-core versions, they're going to share the L2 cache. Along with the power processing, they also did a bunch of stuff where they shortened the pipeline. So they took chunks of, you know, Banyas and, again, unspecified portion of the Pentium 4, the NetBurst architecture. It's going to support 64 bits, a 14-stage pipeline, which should make branch prediction less, you know, this should be basically means bad branch prediction should be less brutal on the performance.
Well,
that's
costly. Yeah.
They made a mistake with the pipelines. I mean, they went too long on the pipelines, and they were having real trouble with that. So
yeah,
I can understand why they're backing off that, although that lowers performance in theory, right?
Well, they also played around. I mean, it depends on how you look at it. You know, if every time you have a bad decision, you have to throw out everything that's in the pipeline.
Right.
You know,
it requires optimizing compilers and recompiling your code so that the branch prediction is more efficient.
And apparently, they're doing a bunch of work on the prefetch and the branch prediction better.
Do you know, Patrick, if the L2 caches are being made larger still?
I'm not sure that they talked too much about the size of the L2 cache.
I'm going to predict
it was
predict,
scalable. Which
I would
thought
predict,
was interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what they want because then they can do cheap chips with no cache or low cache.
Yeah.
But I would predict that they don't want to have too much L2 cache because it does speed up the processor, but it also adds considerably to the power and heat issues.
Yeah, but I'm worried that if the cores are sharing a single L2, then you really start to see, you know, more like a hyper-threading lack of performance than true separate core performance.
You've been saying that for a while, Steve. That
L2 cache is so important.
That's really the thing that makes a difference in a processor.
Yeah,
more than anything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all turns out.
Because external motherboard dynamic memory is so much slower than the on-chip cache. You just don't want to go out.
You know, you got to remember, they're fighting a trench battle with AMD for the high end of the market, especially with the gamers and the power users, which means they can't afford to give up a lot of performance at that end. So I can't imagine they're gonna shrink the L2 cache that much.
This podcast, by the way, being recorded on an AMD FX64. I just thought I'd throw that in.
A non-Centrino machine.
And by the way, I'm not getting paid by AMD or Intel, which apparently is a big mistake. Somebody was telling me that somebody who's intimately acquainted with not only this show, but how much is kind of the going rate out there for these kinds of things, we could be making thousands of dollars a show if we accepted advertising. Many thousands.
Might want to change the model.
Nope. Gotta remind people that your contributions keep this show alive. And when we're going live, we're going to have some extra costs. But that's all part of the plan.
Wait, we're not paying for the booze bill for everybody.
And I'm sure you're right, Leo.
We are paying for the booze bill.
I'm sure you're right, Leo.
Yeah.
you just don't want to start having ads. It's just
No. Cuts Down 13. Have you followed this story?
No.
Oh, my God.
This is complicated.
These are high school students. They were given iBooks as part of the, you know, you go into the high school, you get an iBook. A lot of schools are doing that now, in fact.
They were locked down.
They were locked down. They had protection on them. They were using, I think, Apple's firmware.
You mean like you need an admin password to install stuff type of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Kids said, wait a minute. We want to install iChat. What good is a laptop without iChat? So they hacked it and put iChat on there. They were charged with felonies.
Yeah.
Felonies.
Okay. Let's slow down a
read
little bit.
Read the EULA.
There's a lot of really – we actually got a letter from a student at the school. And the student at the school – and this was a while back. The student at the school pointed out that there's pretty much every news agency that's covering this is having a different slant. Most of them don't most of them have very different interpretations of the reality going on. I think one of the things that's interesting is one of the parents or maybe it's an uncle of one of the kids was decided that and this sounds like a pretty legitimate chunk of it was that the school went directly from, you know, some internal discipline to try to get the kids to stop, because what they were doing is they were taking all of the browsing controls off of it. They were installing extra software. Supposedly there was also some messing around with other people's computers and some hacking of information. That's where it starts to get fuzzy. They told the kids to not do it because they didn't want them using, you know, things like chat in the classrooms and stuff. The kids basically kept doing it, and then rather than going to the parents, and this is the stuff where I'd really like to you know, hear a good local, well-informed reporter on this, is instead of going to the parents, they called up the cops. And the cops, basically, what they had to work with was a felony charge.
I'm looking at the Associated Press article. The, according to the AP, and again, I don't, you know, that's all we know, so you might be right, this is completely wrong. They were charged with computer trespass and computer theft after the school district said, we tried detentions, we tried suspensions, we tried other punishments. They continued to do it.
Yeah.
But computer theft and computer trespass are felonies. Well, the good news is they have dropped the charges. They've offered him a deal, I guess, in which they'll drop the charges in exchange for 15 hours of community service, a letter of apology, a class on personal responsibility, and a few months of probation.
That I'm sure they got their attention.
Well, yeah. They did, although according to the attorney for one of the students, a few are thinking about refusing the deal because, quote, they don't feel they've broken any laws. But I tell you what, if you're facing a felony charge, which will ruin your life.
Well, they're under 18, though, so they...
It'd get expunged. Oh, you would know about this. So it would get expunged after you hit 18?
Why would you know about this, Kevin?
I've a couple little nicks here and there.
I'm just teasing. I don't know anything. I would hope they would take the deal, although
you know how it is
when you're 15 years old.
Yeah, you do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Heck, I'm not doing that!
How do you get somebody for computer trespass for simply installing an application?
Well, the thing is that they weren't just simply installing iChat.
Yeah, it says they obtained...
That was what was passed on to us from a couple of the, at least one or more of the students that were at Kutztown.
It says they obtained passwords.
They
were probably pushing their luck.
Well, the obtaining password part was really funny. They were pushing their luck, but the thing that was really funny is the original IT passwords to lock down the notebooks were apparently written on a label that was put on each notebook. So there's some pathetic security.
It sounds like
being
the security
employed.
Of my own high school's network way back in the day, which is non-existent. And you know what? I think maybe they should consider if you're going to hand out notebooks to students that are arguably modern and can be used in such a way. Have the back end network secured before you go doing this.
I agree.
Well, and it does also sound
too tempting.
It also sounds like the school didn't have lots of IT savvy in order to wrest control back away from the kids after they knew this was a problem. Instead, they were using traditional approaches.
Yeah. Detention.
It's a totally reactive system.
Like the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
I got you next week. I got you the week after that. I own you.
Hey, according to this AP reporter, there must have been someone who decided they wanted to be tech savvy because they said they had remote monitoring function on some of these computers. So someone
They turned that off because they were watching.
Well, they said that the kids turned it off, and then I don't know how they said they were going to do this and used it to view the administrator's own computer screen instead.
Apple Remote Desktop is actually very cool. And it's expensive. It's an expensive program, but if you have the administrator version, you can see every screen. What it'll do is put 16 screens on your screen. You can see every screen on your screen and watch what they're doing, and it rotates through them. So that's what they turned off.
So you can watch the teacher surf porn.
Yeah. And you know what? I would turn it off. If you had this, let's put yourself in this situation. They give you an iBook. You're 15 years old. You have the skills to do it. The password's written on the label on the bottom. Wouldn't you turn it off?
Of course.
First thing I do.
Isn't this a little stupid? Because if you turn it off, the teacher's obviously going to know that you're the one person in the room of 29.
Kevin would start feeding it somebody else's computer.
Yes. I would create a separate profile and have that be the active one they're viewing.
Just feed it a Sound of Music video.
I'm watching Maria. How do you
But what's wrong with installing chat programs? I mean, it's their computer, right? I mean,
classroom. They're supposed to be they're supposed to be involved in the educational process.
They could be trading notes back and forth.
Every school is different. Right?
I almost said it.
One of the schools here, one of the kids I know who goes to a high school here, she was downloading music onto the computer. Every year they turn in the computer and they get a new computer for the next year. It's not a new, but they get a different computer.
Yeah, because the hard disk fills up.
Right. So, well, that's the thing. She said, I lost all my music. So she asked the minister, can you give me my music back? Because they took it. he said no. What about this, the voice over Internet providers? I don't know if I use Vonage and Packet 8.
Oh, the FCC.
I've got urgent notes from both Vonage and Packet 8.
Yep,
please, go online and sign this 9/11 thing because next week, if you have voice over Internet and you haven't signed this document saying, I know the 9/11 sucks, if you haven't done that, they'll turn off your service. The FCC is forcing them to turn off the VoIP service to all customers who haven't signed this informational notice. Now, fortunately, you can do it online. You just check a box, which I've done.
You know, Leo, even though it's sort of old news for us now since Wednesday, we really ought to talk about Google Talk a little bit just to make sure people know they can go to google.com/talk.
It's great.
Get the new client for online chat and voice connections.
Steve and I used this for Security Now Episode 2, and I thought it sounded better than Skype. Don't you, Steve?
PC communication, though, right?
No conferencing, PC to PC only. Yeah.
Do you also think it sounded...
The deal over 911 is dealing with potentially where it can actually connect to an actual landline or a cell phone.
Yes, it's Vonage or VoIP, Vonage or Packet 8 or
Leo and I
Call Vantage. But that's different. That's a separate. What's happened here, Steve has brought up, has bifurcated. He's brought up a whole other story. So let's finish the 911 story, Steve, and then we'll talk a little bit about Google Talk. But I do want to warn people who are using Vonage or another voice over internet provider like that that provides a phone to phone connection. You may lose your service if you haven't signed that 911 thing. Next week, they're trying to get the FCC to...
The FCC actually extended the deadline to September 28th.
Okay, because that's the last thing I saw was they were trying to get them to do that. So you have a little more time. But isn't that an interesting attitude? Like, well, you know what happened is there was a pretty famous case where a woman was killed or severe... Something bad happened because they called 911.
Right, and she tried to use 911 and had no access to
it. Right,
right.
Yeah, the problem is you can have access. I signed up for 911 on both systems. But you tell it what address you're going to be on. And because these things are portable, I could throw it in my suitcase and I can be in Canada. Right. If I call 911, they're coming to my house in California.
Right. And there's no power failsafe, right? If you power
that's another
out.
Thing. And that's what it says on the disclaimer, the information notice you have to sign. Yes, you know, if my broadband goes out, no 911.
Well, the FCC has really strict regulations on, I guess, being able to get emergency services.
Yes.
So, like, even a cell phone with no service provider... even a cell phone where you haven't paid any kind of bills or anything like that,
still
if the things, yeah, if you
works.
Type 911 yeah. on it, you're getting through.
As it should.
Well, that's also because most cell phones you buy nowadays have GPS receivers in them, and they can actually figure out where you are, or even use the cell tracking.
They can give a rough tracking on the GPS. But the other thing, most people actually use wired, or they use wireless handsets inside of their homes, right? I got trapped in an elevator in San Francisco. The first 7 numbers I called, nobody could pick up because the power was down.
Yep.
Which is why one of the reasons why when I have a landline in my house, I always have a 70s-era Western Electric phone
That's
in
exactly
there.
Right, because those are powered by the phone company, not by you don't have to plug them in.
Wasn't there a day when Patrick Norton came in late to work at Tech TV because he was stuck in an elevator? Is that time.
And you want to talk about scary. San Francisco law, for all those little tiny elevators they put in the smaller apartment buildings, they're required by there's no manual way, unlike a big building elevator where you can slide the door back and undo the internal latch.
Which is the only Patrick would try this, but I'll go ahead, yes.
No, I grew up in New York. I lived in Jersey in an apartment building for a while. Look, the first time you get stuck in an elevator and somebody shows you how to open that door, but compared to spending 2.5 hours sitting in an
elevator.
We're
not recommending this, folks.
We're not recommending this.
Wait, most elevators just drift to the bottom floor.
Wait for security personnel to come and rescue you.
The problem is with those little elevators in the small apartment buildings in San Francisco is they're required by law to lock down the emergency access on the top of the elevator, and the doors can't be opened from outside. The only way you can get out is if you have a screwdriver to basically take the locking latch off the inside.
And you have to have a screwdriver in the elevator with you?
Well, I happen to have one.
But what if you didn't?
What if you didn't? You're in there until somebody figures out a way to get you out.
With jaws of life.
He would have been really late for Tech TV that day.
It was pretty spooky because the internal light was barely functioning because the battery was weak. And there's a little tiny 4-inch portal. It was actually the last time I used the elevator in that building.
Yeah, no kidding.
Did you guys hear about those elevator hacks that came out?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I've been trying to use it, but it doesn't seem to have worked so far.
Do you have
far.
The Otis? Is it Otis elevators?
I'll have to take a look at it. It's supposed to be Otis and 3 or 4 others.
Yeah, if you're on a floor and you want to bypass everyone else that's requesting an elevator,
yes,
you push the floor number that you want to go to and the closed door button at the exact same time. It'll just go take you all the way to it.
And that works in Otis elevators.
Yes.
Awesome.
And now everybody knows.
Oh, that is the best hack. That is the best hack I've ever heard.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I saw it on digdigg.com.
Was it linking to Engadget?
And I thought without Dvorak, we wouldn't have any of those.
I have to make up for his
ads. That is awesome. What a great hack.
That is cool.
Has anybody actually tried it? Because they had a similar hack posted on there cross signals where you can actually push the button a certain way for the cross signal to have it change
instantly.
Over to a walk symbol so you can just cross
I saw that as well. Did you try that?
I tried it 6 times, and a couple of times I thought it might have worked, but I think it was just the timing with the car sitting on the sensors.
Isn't that the urban dream to have control of all of these annoying...
Supposedly they made it a felony now to use one of those...
Yes, they have.
MIRT devices for...
Yep.
Changing signals, and rightly so. I mean, if I'm in that ambulance, I don't want to be held up trying to get to the hospital, and I totally understand that.
Yeah, I do too.
Just not cool.
I love those kind of real world hacks, though. That's you know, hacking the real world is much more interesting.
Have you been to lifehacker.com? That's kind of a cool site.
And there are a couple of good sites for that. What is it? 43 things or 40?
Oh, 43.
43 something.
43 folders.
Folders. Has a lot of stuff like that in there.
Yeah, they got good stuff.
Yeah. So now let's talk about Google Talk, because Steve and I used it for the first time. Well, it came out Wednesday. We used it on Thursday to do Security Now. I was pretty impressed. Were you impressed with it, Steve?
I was extremely impressed. And, you know, when I listen to the MP3 that you produced, I don't hear any difference between the way you sound and the way I sound. And, you know, we're 500 miles apart.
It's and remarkable.
over the internet. What I've learned about it since is that it does dynamically change the compression, and it can get scared if there's an interruption in the connection into lowering the data rate, so that it increases compression, lowers the data rate, and then you start having that underwater sound. It didn't happen to you and me, Leo. We've got a great connection between our two networks. It's 28 milliseconds round trip. But it does actually start out optimistically and then lower the bit rate and increase compression if necessary.
It's really good quality, I have to say. I mean, it's really remarkable. It does have some disadvantages. I mean, of course, you can't have more than one person. It's only right now Gmail to Gmail.
Point to point.
And lack of encryption.
Apparently they plan to do encryption on it.
I'm not impressed, though. The client sucks.
Well, who really needs it? I mean, there's a million chat
it's
clients.
Not, it's the technology they're using for the voice, the VoIP stuff is not even their own technology. It's done by a company called Global IP Sound.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So why are they doing it?
They're just trying to rule the world, I guess. I mean, I hope eventually they'll add a lot more features that will make it different. But right now, it's just a standard IM client. I mean, it's not even that. You can't send files. I don't know.
It's not holding a candle to my Trillion.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, who do you want to own the world? MSN, AOL, Yahoo, Google.
The one good thing, though,
and who else
doing
is
using, was it the Jabra backend for...
It is using Jabra.
Right, which is cool.
So that
is
based upon an open source effort, which is nice, and hopefully...
Well,
it's a non-standard Jabra in the sense that you can't do Jabra to Jabra.
Well, it works with Trillion. Like, I can log in.
Yeah, but that's why it works with
Appian. You have to have Trillion Pro or Trillion Plus to do the Jabra client.
Yeah, but so it works with other third-party clients, but you can't do direct Jabra. Jabra's supposed to do some server-to-server, point-to-point thing that it can't do. I don't know.
Right.
Who cares? I don't know.
Well, what actually first bothered me is I wanted to be online with Google Talk, with Google Talk, except I use multiple Gmail accounts. So if I wanted to log out of one Gmail account and switch over to the other, then it screws with the Google Talk.
Right.
It was weird how it automatically added friends to your list for you.
It does?
That you had been chatting with over Gmail.
Oh, yeah, it's supposed to watch you, yeah.
It watches your Gmail activity and it adds your friends automatically. It was weird.
There is a setting for that, though.
Oh, there
it
is.
Even, I think when you installed it, too, there was a checkbox to have it not do that if you didn't want
to. Yeah, I just clicked next.
This is,
right. Same here.
This is the value add that Google can offer, though.
The VoIP technology is from where? Global
IP Sound. If you go into GTalk and then do a help about, it'll say in there.
Ah, cool.
Steve's looking for some form of super high quality. You know, it stands to reason. I do the radio show over ISDN using one 64 kilobit channel. It doesn't require – that's enough for CD quality audio, for high quality AAC audio.
Right, but the ISDN line's a nice,
point
solid
point-to-point
point
connection. There's no latency.
Perfect.
Right.
There's no...
Zero lossage.
Yeah. But it stands to reason that if I have a 6 megabit connection, I should be able to somewhat duplicate that. So Steve's been looking for something that will do this. And
but you're talking about going over the cloud.
Well, I understand, but
the internet, for those of you who don't understand what I'm talking about.
If I only need 64 good kilobits
over the rainbow,
it seems like I should be able to get that.
Well, it all depends on which way your packets get routed or if you have any quality of service, any QoS guarantee.
Well, the Skype and other voice over IP clients we've messed with, it seems like once you get above 3 people in the conversation, that's where things really start to break down.
And that's because of the upstream bandwidth cap. That's what really kills us. It works well on this.
It's still...
Yeah, it sounds good. We got 3 right now.
It's as good as anything.
Sounds good. One of the reasons it works in here is because I have a 768 up. And so the more up you have, the
better. Did you go business class DSL with that? Oh, you did.
Yeah,
okay.
From DSL Extreme.
I'm considering upgrading my own.
The CO is practically next door. It's like out in the block.
That helps too.
Yeah, it helps a lot. So, but Steve, have you found, I mean, we found this one thing in England, which is extremely expensive.
Called Audio TX, and it the problem is it uses just a TCP transport instead of using a UDP transport, which is really what you want. So they're going over TCP, meaning that they do introduce some deliberate delay in the connection to allow the underlying TCP transport to do the error correction and create the reliable connection for you.
Right.
But I did experiment with it because they have a demo mode that runs for anywhere between 5 and 30 minutes and then it just drops your connection. And it's, I mean, it sounds spectacular.
Really?
But Leo, what you and I did yesterday I thought was completely acceptable using Google Talk.
We'll keep doing that for you and me because there's only two of us and it works very well. Yeah.
That's strange. I would think if you went TCP that would be worse. I mean, I understand the error correction, but if a problem does occur,
if you get a NAC,
then
if you don't get the ACK, you have to resend, and that's where you get all sorts of problems.
Exactly. And so in fact, what I brought Global IP Sound up, and I have been on this site in the last couple of days. So I rummaged around and I found them when I was doing the searching. So, in the case of TCP, if you don't mind some latency between the endpoints, then you know
it'll be more
accurate. It was using MP3 compression instead of a lower bit rate codec, and that was really why it was working so well.
Yeah.
Oh, and I forgot to say that we were running at 320 kbits instead of, for example, right now we're at about 46.
Right.
Because I'm monitoring the bandwidths that we're using for Skype.
What most of these guys are doing is assuming a bad network. They're trying to improve the compression to the point where you don't need a perfect connection. Is that it?
Well, yeah. In fact, you and I have a different goal, Leo. I would like to have a studio-quality connection to you for the purpose of recording these MP3s.
Well, it's easy. Just buy an ISDN line and a $7,000 codec, and you're set.
Exactly. whereas the goal of most people is just to have a free connection where you can understand the other person.
It's a different.
You know, and it's working. I mean, here we are with Skype, and it works great with Google Talk, too.
At least for a while, I think, the last Skype twit, because next week we're going to be live at the Apple Store at One Stockton. I'm saying it again. I just want to make sure somebody shows up. I'm deathly afraid we're going to go there, and there's not going to be anybody there. That's September 4th, 4 o'clock at the Apple Store at One Stockton. And then following that, at Noonan's Bar and Grill... I know people show up because they've got booze. And no, Patrick, I didn't get a deal with them to get the free booze. I'm sorry. I've got all the black coffee you can drink, though. How about that?
Yeah, well, it's the miracle of a $5 to $20 tip. You can usually get all the black coffee you can drink.
It sounds like you need some right now. Go have a cup of coffee.
It's those top-shelf lemon drops you order that I'm afraid of.
Well, I figured, you know, Dvorak's so worried that it's going to be a dull. He says it's going to be like a CES panel. It's going to be dull because we're all sitting there. I think if, you know, we just get everybody drunk, it won't be anything like a dull CES panel. It's worked for Dignation.
Yeah, and it's worked for that meetup that we did.
I wasn't drunk, but everybody else was a little hammered. Yeah.
No, that would be a really funny like lineup. Like, what does each individual member drink?
Lemon drops.
Right? So,
lemon drops
for you. 40s for
he's a
Kevin.
Beer. No.
Are you saying you affect
the 40s only for the broken?
Yes. Well, 40s are a little.
He's not a malt liquor guy. He's a beer guy.
Yeah, I like beer. I like a good.
We'll get you some of this
Chimay Red.
We'll get you some of this Dipsy barley wine. It's supposed to be very
good. Stuff.
Old Dipsy.
You said it's really strong stuff. Yeah, though, like 8-9%.
Yeah,
like that stuff.
The term barley wine doesn't appeal to me, but I'll have to try it.
Dvorak's going to drink Bordeaux. We know that. Steve, you've got to come up for this. I can't bear it that you're not going to be able to be part of this.
Prager's a white wine guy, right, Dave?
You might get me up there.
Good.
Wine coolers out of it.
Wine coolers.
So in the
bites, I personally prefer Zima.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
Who drinks that?
I don't know.
12-year-olds. What stuff is awful.
You know, still sell that?
Honestly, it's aimed at people who are 21.01.
The first alcohol I got drunk off of was Zima.
Yeah. Boone's Farm Strawberry Ripple. They don't have this anymore, but they used to have this candy-flavored wine, basically, which is clearly aimed at kids.
Like box wine?
No, it was strawberry ripple,
like deliberately candy flavored.
Yeah, you know, Steve, you're roughly my age. Don't you remember Boone's Farm and Ripple?
Oh, yeah.
It's still available.
Yeah. Apple.
Yeah, they
Apple
still make schnapps and some horrible flavors, which are totally for the
it's got to be aimed at children.
Junior.
I mean,
now it's Mike's hard lemonade.
They're aimed at teenagers in college.
I think it's terrible. It's terrible.
Oh, please! Who are the biggest consumers of alcohol in this country?
I know. I just read a study that they're almost all binge drinkers. By the way, did you see that?
People that drink what?
Young drinker, underage drinking. Well, that makes sense. You don't have a, you don't sip a glass of wine.
Exactly.
You're there for one reason only.
And now they just have a term for the activity that's been going on forever.
Yeah. It's always been drinking.
That's the biggest problem is you know, you look at, like, you know, all of the great beer ads of the last 30 years were all, you know, aimed at teenagers.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You know, it's... Yeah, because, you know, it's not like somebody's going to, like, move to Stroh's
right.
they've been drinking.
Oh, yeah,
for
they want to hook
years.
You young. You're right. What you start with is what you're going to die with. Same thing with cigarettes. That's why Joe Camel, right? In the biting the hand that feeds us department, Elliot Spitzer, the attorney general, literally feeds us. Elliot Spitzer, the attorney general for New York, and a guy who's, by the way, running for governor, has won a judgment against America Online for a $1.25 million. Because it was so hard to cancel AOL. And you know what they found out? What happened is there were about 300 consumer complaints to his office. They did an inquiry. They found that the company had been rewarding employees for, quote, saving subscribers who called in to cancel.
Saving them from themselves.
Yeah. So what it was doing was giving these employees incentives to just ignore the cancel.
It was social engineering from their side. Yeah. They were trying to talk. Yeah. You have to go through like three or four different hoops to finally cancel your membership. And they would offer free months.
Right.
They would do all this to try and keep you. And, you know, that's a problem. If they offer you a couple months, you're like, oh, I might keep this around.
Right.
And then you forget to cancel it, of course, after two months.
Yeah.
So it's a pain.
I have on my credit card bill probably five or six things that just automatically renew. Because you just forget about it.
My gym membership in L.A. right now.
Yeah, right. You're still paying for a gym you can't use.
You live there.
And that's why the whole plan behind the TWIT monthly donation is that people will, you know, it's $2. You're going to forget that, right? Just keep paying it for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I have an Earthlink account I've been trying to kill off I think, 10 months.
I'm embarrassed to say I had a Prodigy account that I signed up for when I worked for the site in 1997 that I canceled only a year ago. And I literally never used it.
But Prodigy still exists?
That's a down payment on a nice used car.
We support our industry.
I never, ever used it. Yeah, well, it kept getting sold. Somebody else owned it. I'd get these letters in the mail saying, congratulations, your Prodigy account is now dime a dozen ISP.
It's an SBC now.
SBC? Yeah, that's right. I got
SBC,
Yahoo. Uh-huh. And I never used it. And finally I called, and they said, what's your password? I said, you're kidding. I set this up in 1997. I have no idea.
Well, David, you were telling me the other day about your Netflix account.
Oh, yeah. As soon as I moved from San Francisco to L.A., I stopped using my Netflix account because I didn't have an address. I didn't know what my new address would be, and I just kept getting charged. I haven't ordered a Netflix movie in a year, and I give them $20 a month every month.
The three movies that you moved with?
Yep. And now I got to find them. They're like put up in storage somewhere. I got to find those three movies so I can start getting new ones if I want to use my Netflix
account. Or you can just pay $20.
Yeah, I know.
They don't mind.
They don't mind at all. You can cost them $4 or something. TiVo turns a profit for the first time.
Yay.
Too late.
Well, especially now that they're talking about putting ads on the screen when you fast forward through commercials.
Bye-bye, TiVo.
Like, goodbye.
Well, they've already been doing that to some degree with pre-caching commercial content. And then whenever that commercial will pop up on TV, you'll get the little thumbs-up thing in the corner saying, if you want more information, push thumbs up right now.
Right,
and it'll play that commercial that's already stored on the TiVo.
Yeah, because you could ignore it. They made, get this, revenues of $46 million last quarter. They made $240,000.
Hey, it's positive, though.
It's better than losing $10 million, which is what they did the quarter before or the year before. I think, frankly, now, I have to say, I'm starting to see more and more guys who are of a certain tech savviness dump all of that stuff, even maybe dump the cable and start watching shows off BitTorrent. And that's basically how they get their TV. Don't you think that's kind of...
Oh, that's me. You know,
that's IPTV.
I just moved into my new place, and the roommates got the cable boxes. I was the only one. Did not get the cable
box.
Don't
need it.
Don't need it.
Every show that you want to watch, if it's not a good show, you can't... I mean, you're not going to download Will and Grace.
Oh, you could.
You could, though.
But you're not.
But all the cult stuff that we like Firefly... Yeah, actually, Will and Grace is a bad example. That's a funny show. But like Firefly and Lost and... Weeds. Those things are all on BitTorrent.
And they're up before you can get them.
Yeah.
Because we're on the West Coast. They air on the East Coast. They encode them. They post them. And then you can get them.
Oh, I'm blown away because it airs on the East Coast. Someone actually captures it, rips the commercials out, and puts it up before you can watch it.
And they capture the HD version, so you get a better quality than I would be getting.
I'm blown away that many people have these HD capture cards.
So my question is, Now, by the way, I should underscore that this is illegal. Okay, who cares? So my question is...
What's illegal?
What I would... I don't know. Nothing we've referred to here.
It's aired publicly anyway.
What I would... Oh, that's... Well, yeah, but that doesn't count. It's still copyright material.
Yeah.
Just because it was on the airwaves doesn't mean anything. That doesn't...
So it's copy wrong.
It's copy wrong. What I would like is something like a Mac Mini, a little thing, that I could somehow easily control and program to download these torrents. You know, a media device that's torrent-focused. Has anybody done something like that?
I mean, sort of a torrent cast.
A torrent that I could just, you know, I don't want a TiVo. I don't have a cable. I don't get any TV into my house.
What about like a Myth TV or anything like that?
No, because I don't have cable.
Okay, so you
want to? I want to be able to plug it into the Ethernet, and I want some easy way to control it so that I could say, you know, I don't know what's running, Azurius with a script or whatever, but I could say these are the shows I want. It'd be nice if I had a TiVo-like grid on that thing. These are the shows I want. And then I want a playback. I want Myth TV, but I don't want it to be getting it from the cable. I want it to be
downloaded. You want it to be coming over Patrick's cloud.
Yeah. I want it coming from the cloud. Has anybody done that?
Well, there's an RSS plugin for it.
Next system.
Yes.
That would be a great,
that would be really cool.
Great topic.
As long as we don't go to jail for it, but yeah.
Well, how could you get around it? Well, there's plenty of legal BitTorrents. So just say it's for legal. Don't
right.
Guys, do this for Battlestar. This is, no, you call it the Battlestar Galactica media player.
Well, the problem is there's no consistent naming conventions.
No, that's why you have to have an interface to trackers.
And Azorius allows you to put in keywords and things like that it can look for and then pull down the torrent files.
There's another problem is that the MPAA just sued a whole bunch of BitTorrent users.
Well, I have that fixed too, because I'm using the iPhantom, which the cable modem goes into that, and then my router goes in the iPhantom, and that sends an encrypted, it scrambles it, it's encrypted IPsec to their servers, and then anonymizes it. So you don't know who I am. I look like I'm iPhantom.
I'm also seeing a lot of sites now offering the Magnet Link, the decentralized Azorius tracker, which is another option.
But
too,
let's say
you're not using a tracking site.
The truth is, in the long run, I don't want to do this for illegal purposes. What I'm hoping is this is the way IPTV might play out. I'd like to get the system. I'd like to get Battlestar Galactica, which is offered legally as a BitTorrent, or whatever people decide to do.
Would you, let's say Comcast offered a service where you'd install an application, you could choose the shows that you want and then pay per show.
Sure,
I'd
do that.
Right to your PC.
You
would
bet.
You do that?
Yeah.
So would I.
As long as the PC is hooked up to the TV in the living room, right?
Yeah, you could kick
what
it
you really
to the
want
TV.
Is a remote control interface on the TV.
See, isn't that their in-demand service?
I guess it kind of is.
But then you still have to pay the monthly. I mean, they don't offer
all
the shows.
But it's a one-time fee. No, it's not all the shows.
Let's say an a la carte way of.
Right, exactly. Just the channels you want to buy.
And
it's coming.
There's free stuff. That's what I like. I mean, I think there's going to be more and more free stuff.
Battlestar Galactica is legally distributed as a BitTorrent.
That's my understanding that they decided. I think it was Galactica that did this.
Well, they put up the one or two episodes, didn't they?
Oh, maybe they don't do it regularly.
Yeah. They did a couple. I think they did two.
And I'll be honest with you, the quality wasn't all that great, and it was in 4x3. It wasn't even the widescreen version.
That's too bad. They would be very smart to do this, because I don't think it hurts your television audience. I think
so. Yeah, so basically, yeah, that's the interesting question. So is the television industry and broadcast and cable going to be as smart, as the RIAA was in eventually moving their content to an online distributed legal media?
I certainly hope they're smart enough to do that, because if they're not, it will happen for them.
Well, the problem is commercial support, because, you know, we're always fast-forwarding through the commercials anyway, and as you guys said, you know, the shows are being captured and commercials edited out because no one wants to sit through that.
I pay a buck a show.
It takes 60 minutes and drops it down to 40 because it's one-third commercial now.
It surprises me how many vendors I talk to in the industry, especially display industries, that they're talking about now moving back to radio for advertising because they know everyone who watches TV is usually using a PVR device to fast forward.
Well, good, because everybody listening to radio is now listening to podcasts. So
that's true.
or XM. Or, when you guys were talking about having, you know, your credit cards bled slowly, I was reminded that I've got 3 or 4 XM receivers that I'm licensed to use, but I never listened to.
There you go. There's another
serious
one.
Serious, baby.
I think podcasts are going to – here's another example of stupid TV executive tricks. There's a Family Guy and a Simpsons podcast. I thought, oh, Fox is brilliant. They're doing podcasts of the Family Guy and Simpsons, and you'd think they'd put the show audio.
Terrible! I listen
or
to
put
it.
A clip. What do? They have some moron reading a show synopsis with all the jokes taken out. What's that all about?
I subscribed to it. I saw the Family Guy on iTunes. And I'm like,
wouldn't
right?
Even if it only had 10 minutes, you would love it, right?
I know.
Just a 10-minute clip. You wouldn't not watch the show. It would make you watch the show. You say,
sure.
I got to see that show.
Family Guy is one of my favorite animated series.
Maybe it's the kids watch it, and I have to stop them because it's so foul.
Oh, it's so much worse now. Oh, I mean, not worse, bad,
so
but
foul. But I love it. I mean,
it's not foul on like a South Park level, but
it's
how old are the kids, Leo?
It is funny.
11 and 13. They love it. It's exactly at their level, but I don't want them to start thinking.
So then they didn't know what Peter was talking about when he wanted to play the waiting game.
Oh, that was
I don't even know if I should belong on this. That shouldn't belong on this podcast either.
Well, those who know will be appalled, and the rest of us are just completely clueless.
That was hardcore.
Oh God.
You're just not cool unless you watch Family Guy.
It's a very funny show. Kids know it, and they love it.
Oh, you can get that on BitTorrent.
Well, see, we don't. Well, that's it. We don't watch it, but we don't BitTorrent either. We just rent the DVDs because the first few seasons are out on DVD. But it gets worse.
Oh yeah, the latest season was the most hardcore.
Are they still on? It's still on. I guess it must be.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be.
Oh yeah. But Adult Swim, baby.
Here's an example of a bad idea, though. I mean, they could really do well. Maybe it's a rights issue. Maybe they don't have the actors' rights to use the actors' voices or something like that.
So how many terabytes serve?
19, I
19.
believe.
Yeah. So I got a
you mean downloading the MP3s?
I got a quiz for you.
Twit broadcast.
What comes after terabyte?
Petabyte.
And then?
Yottabyte.
Nope.
Exabyte, then yottabyte?
Yep. No, exabyte, then zettabyte.
Zettabyte, and then yottabyte. I like the yottabyte. Yada, yada, yottabyte.
Where's gigabyte?
Yeah, there is no gigabyte or gigawatt. There, that does not exist. So, but I think people for a while sometimes said gigabyte instead of gigabyte.
Is it GIF or JIF?
I say GIF. But it could be
GIF. I say GIF.
Hey, have you seen how for measurements though for storage they're impressing upon at least in the international community to not say kilo because kilo equals 1,000, and it should be kibby. For 1024?
No.
Oh, because it's binary, not digital.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Talk about just making it even more confusing for people, but...
Kibbles and bits. Kibbles.
Yeah. Kibbles and bits. Kibby bytes. Kibby bytes. Instead of saying kilo. Kibby.
I'm trying to mute Patrick. I can't figure out how to do it. Oh, well, it's all right. It's kind of funny.
You better not. You'll push the wrong button.
I know. I will. I'm using the stupid Mighty Mouse, and I can't right click. I can't left click now. I can only right click. The whole thing is like stupid.
Is that the name of the,
yeah,
of the Apple Mouse?
Yeah, they licensed it.
It's actually a Mighty Mouse.
There's not enough feedback. I mean, you don't know that you're really doing the right button.
No.
The problem is I always have both fingers, even when I'm doing the right button, on at the same time.
Right.
You
have to consciously lift.
Oh, so it's a proximity sensor sort of?
Yeah. It knows. Wow. It senses your finger. It's typical over-engineered solution for a perfectly good product.
Hey, it sounds cool on paper.
You don't need it. It's overkill.
You know that sounds cool, though, when they came up with the idea. They're like, ooh, proximity sensors for your fingers.
And there's a little piezoelectric speaker in it to make click sounds. It's just, talk about over-engineered. It's just a mouse.
Somebody wears their headphones 90% of the time. I'm using a computer.
Well, it gives you the audio also gives you a little mechanical feedback too. I mean, it kind of, because it's clicking, it kind of feels like there's some mechanical.
Have you guys tried the new G5 laser mouse from
Yes.
Logitech?
Is that the one where you can put the weights in it?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Now that's a Mighty Mouse.
That's the ultimate gamer gift right there, folks. If you got a serious gamer on your list,
what makes it so good?
Custom.
One is you can weight the mouse in any of the four corners up to, you know, they include a little set of weights, which are pretty cute looking, actually. But the cool thing is just that laser pickup. It's 20 times more accurate, they claim, and I believe it, than their previous LED-based optical sensor system.
Who makes it? This isn't the Logitech one, is it?
More problematic surfaces, too.
Yeah, it's Logitech. It reminds me of like the Pinewood Derby, like you're putting little weights in the thing.
Totally. You drill out the bottom of your Pinewood car. And
I
still have my car.
Yeah, I do too. Pinewood Derby was awesome.
I got third place, baby. I'm proud of it.
Nice. My son got second place and went to the semifinals, but then we lost to some. Yeah, there's always a kid.
Did you do the dad's one too? Because the dads can make one too.
Right. Well, the dads end up making them anyway. I did not. I said, no, you're making it. And his look, you know, like a kid made it.
Right.
And then there's some, they have enamel and they're varnished. Right, and like they look like, you know, it's, you know,
but there were supposed to be weight requirements.
There are.
Were there not? Okay,
yes.
Because the guy who ended up winning the one at ours, he must have had like 15 lag bolts bolted, just screwed into the wood.
That's
on the back.
Allowed.
The thing must have weighed 4 pounds.
No, they weigh it.
Just like,
they have a careful weigh in at the beginning.
Yeah. And then, I think I got screwed.
Can you still use graphite?
Yeah, they used to use graphite on the wheels.
Yes. They squirt graphite on the wheels.
Powdered graphite, baby. I even shaved off those little nubs on the plastic wheels
on
the inside that touched so it wouldn't reduce friction.
It's so funny that you guys remember that so vividly. I guess my son will too.
You know? Did you do the little regatta?
No, we haven't done that yet.
That's fun.
Let me ask you, when is that Windows Vista editorial panel that you guys are going to do? When is that? Is that already done?
That was actually on the 26th, but we do have, if you go up to the Digital Life TV website, we've got a link to the video I did, which is a quick walkthrough, taking a look at Aero and Glass and some of the security features that are in there.
Can you give us a summary?
The biggest thing people are going to notice is the new Aero design, the Glass interface, or the Glass addition to the which is essentially adding transparencies to the interface, pretty windows, and then the user account protections, which is stuff you can lock down gaming and you can lock down access. But the biggest thing is if you turn the security on, which is actually a pretty intelligent thing to do. Anything that would normally require an administrator level account to install, it will request you to type your password in. So anytime you're installing new software or any of that
good.
Stuff, so it's just a really
nice.
Yeah, it's actually a
nice.
Brilliant addition. I will be curious to see whether or not they ship that turned on or
that's
off.
That's what keeps Apple's OS X safe, and that's
so,
how it
so
should
it
be.
So it means you can now usefully use Windows without being the admin
root.
Account.
Yep. And that's key. And that really, I think that is the bottom line about why Windows is currently insecure, is that because everybody runs an administrator and it never asks for permission when it's modifying the system.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the final version of that looks like.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of potential. It's
So tell me what Aero is and what Glass is. I've heard you say this. What are you talking
Aero
about?
Aero is essentially the new design, so that's the new graphical design.
It's like Aqua?
For Windows Vista. Yeah, essentially. Yeah, it's okay. It's their version of Aqua.
Man.
And then Glass is just the transparencies that are employed, so you can see a fuzzy version of the window that's behind
Alpha
the window
channel.
On the very
Alpha
edges
channels,
of the frame.
Yeah.
Alpha okay. channels, yeah.
So far, they've got nothing new that OS X hasn't had for 3 years. Go ahead. Keep going.
That's pretty much what my reaction to it.
Well, and do you guys like these transparent windows where you can, like, see through the whole surface of the window? That just annoys me.
A lot of Linux users do that, though. They love that.
Well, as long as you have full control over the level of transparency, I find there's always a certain point where your eye is okay with it, but if it's not transparent enough or if it's too light, it's either annoying or useless.
I end up turning it off.
They talked about, who is it that was going to, as you're using the computer, if you don't use a window for a while, it kind of fades out in the background.
They're already doing that in Word, in Office 2003. The toolbars fade away. It's the most annoying feature. It's typical
like those,
Microsoft.
It's like those self-customizing menus.
Yeah,
where
the personalized menu.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stuck
oh, you always got to click the little double down in order to get the rest of the items on the menu.
Yes.
It's a father's knows best attitude. That and by the way, Apple has it too. I mean, look at the one button mouse. It's for some reason these technology companies just don't trust users.
I think it's that the companies have run out of things to do.
Well,
and
that's
so
true,
they're just adding features to
random.
Make it, another version number to move everybody up and get some more revenue.
Now, with new disappearing menus. Who wants that?
Guess where your document went.
This is nothing new to the tech industry.
No, it isn't.
Do you really want to see the contents in this folder?
Electronics,
do not recommend you change any of it.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see
that? Given how far graphics technology has come, I'm glad to see operating systems at least incorporating the basics of some of that power, hopefully. And, if you're going to make it look pretty, you might as well take it the entire way and utilize the power of the latest hardware that's out there.
I kind of disagree. I kind of think that keep it simple and use the power when it's appropriate in a game or, you know, but let's not.
I'm not saying just add fluff for fluff's sake, but you know what? If I can have well done transparency that, you know, doesn't say requires a Pentium 4 and half a gig of RAM in order to operate properly, which at this point that's pretty much every system sold, but
right.
It's kind of nice just to see that we've gotten to that point. Granted, I kind of miss the old days of, you know, DOS, but hell, that's what Linux is for now.
I think a little UI sugar is fine, but it's just, you know, I mean, you got to do it subtly and appropriately. It's an aesthetic. Look, it's aesthetics. And I guess the best thing to do would be let users do what they want, right? Customize it. Make it easy.
There's going to be
some
customizability. It'll also be interesting to see whether or not people adopt to the whole shared. They put share in every folder window.
As long as they put Sunny in every folder window, I'm okay with it.
And what was this deal about the peer-to-peer sharing being turned on by default? So the computers, so that these new machines were trying to connect to other ones.
Oh. Presume
about that.
Presume that these are beta features that they will have the good sense not to ship. That would be just nutty.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that yet.
Is that some of their Avalanche stuff? Have they started to incorporate any of Avalanche into the OS?
Nah, because pretty much
they have some sort of peer networking technology that they said was also briefly on in the early XP, but they decided not to include it. But it's now back in Vista, and it's turned on in these betas, so that the beta machines are like looking for other beta Vista boxes and hooking up and creating a peer network.
Is it for like quality feedback or something, or what?
No, it's like they think that peer-to-peer is going to be a next-generation important technology, and they want to build it into the OS.
Well, I kind of agree with that. I mean, just kind of headless peer-to-peer, just for peer-to-peer's sake, makes no sense.
Yeah.
If you've got a task to do.
And Leo, it'll be using universal plug-and-play to reprogram the NAT routers and you know, poke holes through our security in order to find other machines.
What do you think of ZeroConf, which is what Apple calls it Rendezvous, and then they called it Bonjour because somebody else had Rendezvous. And by the way, it's not Avalanche, it's Avalanche. Just make sure you get that right. What do you think of ZeroConf, Steve? Is that dangerous? You know about ZeroConf. Is that dangerous? I think it seems like a good thing. I mean, you plug it in.
I think it makes a lot of sense as long as you restrict it to the LAN and don't let it go out over the WAN.
So when you plug in a ZeroConf printer, you don't have to install anything. It just knows.
Absolutely.
Oh, I like it. It works great.
It's totally cool.
Yeah. So that's right. Keep it to the LAN only. Don't
you know? And they ought to do something clever, like make all the packets that are emitted have a TTL of 2 or 3,
right,
so that the packets can't. Nothing can keep the packet alive as it tries to go out on external routers.
What a good idea! So that's enough time to transverse your LAN, but nowhere near enough time to go out to the net.
Yep.
What a good idea!
And no one does that. It's like so simple.
Did you think of that?
Yeah.
I would go patent that right now. Short TTLs. Did you see a Microsoft employee brought a virus back to Redmond from Malaysia? Measles. That's the virus. In fact,
I'm looking
at the King County Health Bulletin. It says the infected person visited the following areas: Malay Satay Hut in Redmond, Thai Ginger in Redmond, the Microsoft Redmond campus, and the Microsoft cafeteria. And they give the times and dates that the guy went there. So if you were there, go get your measles shot. This is the problem with offshoring workers. They bring back measles.
He was probably there to pick up the latest beta of Vista and bring it back to Redmond.
That could very well be. Okay, one last story, then we got to go because we're running out of time. Halo, Universal. They've signed a deal with Microsoft to do the Halo movie.
Master Chief, the backstory.
Exactly. I think that Joshua Brentano should sign a deal with them to do the jumping trucks trick that he figured out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I hope it's a good movie.
You remember that, guys?
Yeah.
That was the funniest thing.
You take all the little warthogs, you drive them around so they're all facing each other. And what do? You launch a rocket into it or something?
And they do this
pirouette.
This is all live action, though, right? This movie? Yeah.
Well, there's a Doom movie coming out with The Rock. Have you seen that?
Gosh.
The only thing that gives me hope for this Halo movie, it's written by the guy who did 28 Days Later. Wasn't that a great movie?
Yes,
the zombie movie.
Oh. See, a bunch of us sat down and we tried to list one movie based on a video game that didn't suck.
They've all
sucked.
And
we came up with... So maybe this is the one that turns it around.
Final Fantasy.
I'm not holding my breath.
Oh. I mean, in fact, not only suck, but some of the worst movies of all time. Lara Croft.
But think of the product placement opportunities for Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. Master Chief dolls. Master Chief headgear.
Speaking of which, real quick, I know we got to go, but I just saw a list for the top hacker/computer movies, and I want to know what you guys think.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Okay, so we got Hackers.
Wait, before you say
let's
come up with our votes. So Hackers would be in there. War Games.
Well, let me give you the list so you know all the options, because there might be some you forgot about.
Okay,
it's a big list.
All right.
Okay, Hackers, Sneakers, War Games, Antitrust, Swordfish, the original Mission Impossible, well, not the 1996 Mission Impossible, 13th Floor, Code Hunter, Enemy of the State, Lawnmower Man.
These are all the worst movies.
Trackdown, which is Takedown, Tron, Netforce, Matrix. Oh.
There's only two in there that count. Matrix and War Games. That's it.
Tron, baby.
Tron.
I loved Hackers. Tron's a great movie.
Oh, wait. Pirates of Silicon Valley.
That's a pretty good
one. That was good.
Hackers.
But that one's nonfiction.
Did you buy Robert Redford as a hacker?
It was still
No. You're thinking of Sneakers.
That's Sneakers.
The Sneakers was there.
Hackers is Angelina Jolie.
Sneakers.
At least with War Games, they had Matthew Broderick using a dial-up modem.
Oh, wasn't that great?
That was awesome.
That, now, if you watch that movie now, it's a period piece. I mean, that's it. He had an IMSI computer, and he had a 300 baud modem.
Yep.
That you put the cups.
Yep.
And you could buy an airplane ticket with cash and no ID.
Ah, the good old days.
Oh, I'm telling you.
We had the director of that on the Screensavers. Remember
which
that?
One?
Was it John Badham? Who directed that? I've forgotten. I think it was John Badham. He came in and he had the photo book that he had from it, and it was just really neat.
So, Kevin, what's the result of the voting?
I haven't seen the poll yet. This is just a list.
Where
I don't
is
think
this?
They have the...
Will you dig this for us so we can all vote?
It's actually on the...
John Badham, right Short Circuit.
John Badham, yeah. Short Circuit.
He did Red Dawn,
most
right?
Realistic scenario or...
Ooh, Red Dawn.
Best story, maybe.
There you go. I just dug it, so you can find it at dig.com/user/KevinRose.
When he digs it, it stays dug.
Done.
What
I would say
War Games.
That's my favorite.
Matrix.
War Games is my favorite.
War Games.
Oh, the Matrix has to be the top of the list.
I mean, it's been unfortunately destroyed. The Net. Is that Sandra Bullock?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Unfortunately, Matrix's memory is tarnished by the sequels.
Yeah,
don't you remember?
Best trilogy ever.
Don't you remember?
They cheesed out at the end.
I'll take that to my grave.
I still haven't seen the second and third because I don't want to.
Oh, don't go. Don't do it.
It'll spoil it for me.
Yes.
But don't you remember the feeling? Well, see, I saw it before anybody. I didn't know what I was seeing.
Neither did I.
Don't you remember the feeling walking out of the theater going, oh, my God. That was the greatest movie.
I had no idea. My friends were like, let's go see this movie. I go, I don't want to go see The Matrix.
Yeah,
what
stupid.
Is this stupid
crap? Keanu Reeves.
But it was a fantastic idea.
Oh, that's it. And you walk out going, what if the world really is a Matrix? I mean, that, I'll never have that.
Well, the whole thing is, how do you really know?
That was a great feeling.
Was
you don't
great.
Know.
Yeah.
It is a construct. The whole world is a construct. Of course it is.
And then the end of the movie with Rage Against the Machine. Oh, that's a great song.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that now.
When the credits play?
Yeah.
Yeah, when Neo flies up out of the phone booth at the end.
Yeah.
Oh. See, it's too bad they did the sequels. They should have just stopped.
Well, money.
Robert, you think the 2 and 3 were
money,
pretty good?
Money, yep.
Revolutions and
as a whole, that was the best trilogy Hollywood has ever spit out.
Maybe I'll get the I don't know, Godfather.
The Wachowski brothers rock.
Man. Godfather was the best.
I like that more than even say Indiana Jones, Star Wars, you name
Godfather,
it.
Godfather, the best trilogy ever.
As a trilogy.
Godfather.
I think that'll stand.
All right. We'll
go. Oh, 2 and 3? Well, two
great
two
movies.
Okay.
Great movies.
Three?
Great movie.
Three.
Great movie.
But Jones, they had that second one that you just wanted to be like, oh.
Oh, I want to see
worst
what this
trilogy.
Next the
worst
next Indiana Jones.
Time.
I think for The Matrix, though, for the last two,
Star
you have
Wars.
To watch the last two back to back.
Star Wars, the worst trilogy of all time.
I'm with you.
Which one, the first trilogy or the second trilogy?
One, two, and three.
Trilogy.
Any of the trilogies. Any one taken by itself or all three together. All right, we're out of time, and we're out of twits. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Once again, thanks to AOL for the bandwidth. They do podcasting now, AOLmusic.com. And check out the podcasting page. We're featured there, right? That big twit. We're also featured on iTunes with a big twit this week. So, and we've been number one all week, so I don't think it's click fraud. I think we're actually.
Yeah, I meant to tell you about that big twit icon you've got on the
is that
on the
nice
podcast
on iTunes?
Page. It's very nice.
Yeah, thank you, Apple. Of course, they can't manage to update the Security Now feed to save their lives, but that's okay. Jeez, you know, you can't win everyone. Thank you to Steve Gibson. This is probably the last time, because this is the last Skype, you're probably not going to be on for a while, but we really appreciate your contribution to the show over the last
few
weeks.
It's been really, really fun.
You now are officially a twit for the rest of your life, and Security Now podcast every Thursday with Steve. And that's one of the reasons I decided to do that is because we wanted to keep you in the loop. We appreciate it. David Prager, you'll be back.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Watch system.org because the next, it'll be episode 4, will feature video of this podcast. Have you guys, Keith Harrison's also here. He's their videographer and editor and all around bad boy. Have you decided that whether you're going to film the live one next week, Keith, or? They're thinking
about
doing
it. Yeah, we're going to do it.
Okay. That's awesome.
That'll be cool. We'll get that up a few days after the event.
So September 4th at the Apple Store. What else? Thank you so much, Patrick, for risking your job. I don't want to, but, you know, we want Patrick to keep his day job. That's very
important. Yeah, especially since we actually were officially launching Digital Life TV next week.
Let's give him a big plug.
Let's give him a big plug. Give me a big plug.
Tell me where it is. DigitalLifeTV.com?
Yeah, we've got you can basically download it now, and we do our next live show at 6 o'clock on Tuesday.
Now, Robert, are you involved with this at all, or is this just?
Yeah.
Oh, you are
actually.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Robert's one of our regular guests.
Tell Jim if he doesn't fire you, I will come on and I'll walk on in my underwear.
Excellent. Everyone's welcome. So, I don't know if I want you on in your underwear. Hey. But a very special. We'll do the, because we're actually starting to do. We're going to do an MPEG 4 download, and then we're going to play around with H.264 and do that on a BitTorrent. Uh-huh. So you know, if you go shirtless, we'll definitely do the H.264 version that week.
No. You don't want to see my underwear in high definition. Robert, Steve, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. David Prager in the studio, Kevin Rose, of course. I'm Leo Laporte. Next week begins a whole new generation, really, of Twit broadcasts. I think I'm very excited about this. Now on live and with a live audience, and we hope you will come out and see us if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. We'll be, of course, at the Apple Store, as I've mentioned, on Sunday, and then from then on at Noonan's Bar and Grill in Larkspur Landing. You know, guys, we got to finish the podcast on time once we're there, because the last ferry back to San Francisco leaves at 5:30.
Oh.
So if anybody comes on the ferry, we'll have to end the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like we're the comedian on The Tonight Show. Well, the Twits will be at
Laugh a lot.
Chuckles.
That's above the pizza.
Well, that's it for episode 20 of This Week in Tech. Make sure to visit our website, thisweekintech.com, for more information about the topics we discussed on this show. Starting next week, no more Skype. We're going to be live in front of a live audience. First at the Apple Store, 1 Stockton Street in downtown San Francisco. We'll begin our broadcast at 4 p.m. And after that, at Noonan's Bar and Grill in Larkspur Landing. I hope you can come by and visit. We'll have pocket protectors for the first 500 Twit audience members with the special Twit logo. Thanks to Dorothy Yamamoto for that logo. Thanks to Mark Blasco for our opening theme. And, of course, the great Ashley Twit for our closing theme. And especially thanks to you for listening to This Week in Tech. I'm Leo Laporte. Have a great week. We'll see you at the Apple Store next Sunday. Bye-bye.
This is amazing.
I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn.
Death. Firewall.
Round the horn. Doing the twit.
Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby.
Round the horn.